At this moment, dozens of migrant families are behind bars in a jail outside of Austin, Texas. The jail, T. Don Hutto, is built specifically for immigrant families. This jail is filled with women, men, children, and babies, none who have been charged with any crime. Lauren Martin is working on the campaign to close T. Don Hutto, and she's also studying it for her PhD at the University of Kentucky. Hi, Lauren.
Hi.
Can you tell us a bit about who ends up in this jail for immigrant families?
Sure. They are families from all over the world who have traveled to the United States. And in the case of families, this is a little bit different than the immigrant population as a whole. But for the most part, families are seeking asylum in the United States for political reasons, or in the case of single women with small children or with children, it's often under the Violence Against Women Act, which is an act that allows women to claim asylum on the grounds of domestic violence. So it's usually for those two reasons that these particular families have traveled to the United States. All of the families in Hutto are supposed to be on an expedited removal processing, which is an official term from Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which I will call ICE, just for the sake of shortening their long name. Expedited removal processing applies to people who have been caught within 2 weeks of crossing a U.S. border and who are apprehended or detained or arrested within 100 miles of the border. So these are families who should be deported quickly if they have no other claims to make. For the most part, and there are no official statistics on this as of yet, although we're hoping to get some of them from ICE. For the most part, these are families who are seeking asylum, and so that often actually delays their exit from the U.S. and places them in detention for extended periods of time.
So you mentioned that they usually have come here and have been caught within 2 weeks. Why the two-week marker?
That's something that is that's just part of immigration law in the United States. So the idea behind expedited removal is to streamline the deportation process was specifically targeted at people crossing the southern border. So the idea is to catch people as they come across the southern border and sort of process them and deport them quickly so that they're not sort of sitting in detention for months on end, soaking up tax dollars and all of this. So it's part of an effort to streamline and make the immigration process more efficient for people who are clearly deportable under the terms of current legislation. I should also mention that many of the families who have ended up at T. Don Hutto have declared themselves at the U.S.-Mexico border. So they did not try to enter illegally, as many will claim, but actually proceeded to the land border, declared themselves, said they wanted to seek asylum, and then have been detained at T. Don Hutto, often 4 months at a time.
Where are most of these families from in terms of the countries that they come from?
Mm-hmm. The majority are from Guatemala and Honduras, although there have been families from 41 different countries, including Iraq, which is, very troubling, as you can imagine. The reason for most of the families being from Guatemala and Honduras is these are countries that are undergoing sort of some of the worst negative externalities, so to speak, of neoliberalism, and now with the Central American Free Trade Agreement and a host of neoliberal policies that will be familiar to many of Co-operators' listeners. Many people have been moving north, often moving through Mexico, which is particularly dangerous for Central American and particularly indigenous people. There's a pretty strong stigma within Mexico against people from further south in Central America. Mm. The drug trade in Honduras has gotten particularly nasty over the last few years as well, and there's not a whole lot of sort of state-centered, there aren't a lot of places for people who are being oppressed and sort of by domestic violence or by gangs or by drug dealers or by the police, who are often both, to turn to. So that's why they're moving north.
Now, I think there are estimates that there are about, at least 7 million illegal migrants in the United States. What would putting, you know, several hundred people into this jail do? Do you have any sense of what the rationale is behind this?
The official rationale has a couple pieces to it. First and foremost, Immigration and Customs Enforcement and Customs and Border Patrol and the Department of Homeland Security as a whole has always stressed deterrence. So detention as a whole, and this is there are 32,000 people in immigration detention in the U.S. on a daily basis, and over 300,000 are removed each year. So it's a huge, huge thing, of which family detention is only a small piece. The idea in the beginning was to deter smugglers from, quote-unquote, renting children to cross the U.S.-Mexico border. ICE said that they had frequently come across people who had children with them in order to appear as a legitimate family, knowing that if they declared themselves as a family, they would be released from custody with a notice to appear in front of an immigration judge, and they could either go back across the border and smuggle more people, or they could disappear, quote-unquote, into the interior. So this was in their official press statements, they call it closing a loophole, and it was part of a broader process called, or a broader initiative called the Secure Border Initiative, which shifted the policy of catch and release to catch and remove. And I please use square quotes in your mind when you hear those, because that's part of the dehumanizing language of the Department of Homeland Security to criminalize and dehumanize migrants.
And is there any proof that that was what was happening in terms of smuggling children across the border?
There was a lawsuit in 2007, which we might get to in a second, in which the attorneys asked for evidence that this was indeed a problem, and the agency, ICE, and the Department of Homeland Security did not give them any concrete examples that this had actually been happening. But again, and the other piece of it is that if a smuggler is detained with a child, and they interview the child separately, and the child says, that's not my father, not my mother, the child is then, if they are unaccompanied and don't have any other family members with them, they are then transferred to the Office of Refugee Resettlement, in the Department of Justice, outside of the Department of Homeland Security. Unaccompanied children have a completely different process of custody than families and adult detained migrants. So the idea that detaining families would do anything to that population is actually a little bit spurious. And so the only justification is then deterrence. And there is evidence of fewer people and fewer families crossing the border. They've actually halved the population of families at the Tidon Hutto residential facility since it opened. This could be because they're releasing people faster, or it could be that there are fewer families. But we've also had an economic downturn, and it's really hard to pry apart the extent to which these two family detention centers have caused the decrease in families crossing the border, or whether fewer people are coming in general.
So there's another family detention center.
Yes, yes. I should note, to give the full history of family detention in the U.S., it actually started in March of 2001, so it is, you know, by a few months, a pre-9/11 policy that started at the Berks Family Shelter Care Center in Berks County, Pennsylvania, which is the home of Reading, the Reading Railroad, if you play Monopoly, and about an hour from, or an hour and a half from Philadelphia. It's in quite a rural setting, and aside from a few newspaper articles and a press release, people barely knew that there were families being detained there. The Berks Center also is a former nursing home. So it was set up in the beginning as a residential center and is licensed under Pennsylvania child welfare laws and child care licensing procedures and everything else, and has always met the stipulations of Flores versus Meese, which is a 1997 stipulated settlement that governs the custody conditions for children. This is very different than the history of the Tidon Hutto Family Residential Center in Taylor, Texas, which was built as a prison in 1997, housed federal inmates, Texas state inmates, Oregon state inmates, based on whatever contract was coming through for the Corrections Corporation of America, who owns the facility at the time. And when the contract changed to detain families instead of adult migrants. None of the stipulations of that contract were changed to force CCA, for example, to change any of the sort of internal conditions for families or for children. So initially, when the center opened, it operated just like a prison. Babies wore uniforms. It was pretty awful. It was surrounded by razor wire. Head counts required that families be in their cells for 10 to 12 hours a day. Families were given 20 minutes to eat, which if you have, and there were many infants there, and you can imagine if you've ever been around an infant, even that you cannot feed an infant and yourself and your family in 20 minutes. So the conditions were awful. Many of the people who, the lawyers and attorneys who first visited the facility from the outside, said that they had never in 20 years of, you know, working with immigration detention and immigration law, they had never seen anything like this. It was absolutely new. Since then, conditions have gotten much better, and I'm not sure how much further you want me to go into that. I can tell.
Well, how have the conditions changed?
Now, families were at first required to wear uniforms, for example, and now they can choose their own clothing. If they don't have enough clothing with them, they can choose some from the storeroom. They at first had sort of very penal-looking ID tags, and those have shifted to just be name tags, like children. And I'm not sure if this is the case in Canada, but many high schools, for instance, require students to wear ID badges, so it looks something like, you know, a bus pass. It's pretty simple. Freedom of movement is now very much open. People can move about the facility. When it first opened, they had to have an escort to move from, say, the rec area to the library or to the open common area. And the place itself is set up, I mean, it is a former prison, so laid out according to the pod system, which, if you're familiar with corrections architecture, is a particular style of prison that CCA in particular likes to build. And so it has a common area with some couches that are plastic in the middle and a ring of cells around it. Every part of this is surveilled by camera that can zoom in so closely that if you were to write on a piece of paper, the guards can see what you're writing and who you're writing to. So there's no free expression within the facility. So the cameras are still there, but families can move around on their own. Children can now have drawings, paintings, toys in their rooms. At first they couldn't. They have covered up the sharp edges of the beds. At first, you can imagine, prison is not exactly a safe place for a child. They had automatically opening and closing doors that would lock, which is also very dangerous for small children who may not understand that the door will not stop if they're in the way. That has changed. They don't do the head counts in the same way anymore, so that families aren't confined to their cells. If you've ever seen a prison cell in the U.S., usually, you know, it's a toilet and a bed, and now they've put privacy curtains around the toilets and things like this. And there are murals on the walls and plants and two big playgrounds and an indoor basketball court and exercise bikes. I mean, it's really, according to everyone who saw it the first time around, and people who've gone back, has a completely different feel.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like it's the conditions have gotten a lot better, but you still want this prison closed. Mm-hmm. Why is that such an important thing for you?
Well, there's two things here. One, the only reason that the prison has actually improved is because there was huge public criticism and scrutiny of the facility when it first opened. I mean, the idea of infants and families in prison is something that is horrifying to conservatives, liberals, radicals, libertarians alike. I mean, it's just something that nobody wants to see. After this, and sort of in combination with the sort of public criticism, there was also a lawsuit. So the American Civil Liberties Union, the University of Texas Immigration Law Clinic, and a couple of private law firms with names that I can never pronounce, I'm sorry, sued the Department of Homeland Security in March of 2007. They settled in August of 2007 really quickly. And basically what the settlement required was a very specific list of changes that required that the Corrections Corporation of America, ICE, and Williamson County comply with existing law, which is sort of ironic seeing as how the emphasis is always placed on the illegal status of immigrants that are detained there. And so now the facility does, on paper, comply. However, this lawsuit expires in August, and after that, there won't be any required monitoring sessions by a court-appointed judge. There won't be any sort of, aside from this one lawsuit, Flores versus Meese, there won't be anything that requires CCA or ICE to do much of anything. There's no evidence that it'll revert back, because that would actually take a lot of work and money, and why would they do that? But there are three proposals floating around, a request for proposals for three new facilities, I should say, that ICE is currently considering. And our concern is that they're hoping to expand family detention as a policy. So if they were to do that, all that we have right now on paper are family detention standards, which are guidelines published by the Detention and Removals Office that are not binding. And they're based on adult detention standards, which are based on the Adult Corrections Association standards for adult male prisoners for the most part. And, you know, the sections, for example, address things like contraband, which is anything the prison guards say it is. So in the beginning, for example, when it was run like a prison, when Hutto was run like a prison, I should say, crayons, stuffed animals, and drawings were considered contraband. And in many maximum security prisons, those kinds of things are. And so what we're arguing is that family detention, under its current form and under the terms that ICE has laid out, can never be a healthy place for children and for families. There are alternatives that exist, such as there's various forms of supervised release. Ankle bracelets are very controversial among the advocacy community, but that's certainly something that ICE has considered. We have found those to be very restrictive and don't really propose those either, although they would be better than being detained at Hutto. So the other thing is that alternatives and supervised release are far cheaper. I mean, they're, you know, anywhere from $12 to $100 a day, and being detained at Brooks or Hutto is almost $200 a day. Actually, more than that now, since every year the contract gets bigger, so they're paid more per detainee. In addition to the fact that it's not very many people that are detained, and there's no evidence that this actually has any Homeland Security benefit or significantly increases the level of enforcement of immigration law in the United States. As we said at the beginning of this segment, it's only a few hundred people. And families in particular, when you pick up and move to a new country with your family, you're not going back. I mean, you're fleeing something pretty terrible to make a move like that. This is a very different group of people than economic refugees or economic migrants, people who are coming to work. And I think in the past, families have never been considered a high-risk category. They've never been considered at a high risk for flight. And so this particular immigration policy doesn't make any sense and is expensive for taxpayers and is basically inhumane and immoral, as we're arguing.
You were saying that these families can spend months in Hutto. Mm-hmm. Are there any education programs for the children inside?
Yes. When Hutto first opened, the Texas Civil Rights Organization, they were really, really concerned. They found out that the children were only receiving about an hour of education a day. And basically it was all of the students who spoke different languages and were ages 0 to 18 or 17, just before their 18th birthday, in one room watching videos or coloring. This was what was considered education. And since then, this was one of the major points of the lawsuit, and since then they're now required to comply with Texas regulations for education. So they, I believe they receive about 5 hours of teaching per day. The classes are divided up according to age and ability groups and are taught bilingually, Spanish and English, which puts people who speak other languages at a disadvantage. However, this is a much, it's a huge improvement on what we had before. So including lunch and recess and there's one other hour. It's like lunch, recess, and a little bit of free time or reading time. They get the full 8 hours of day, a day that all children in Texas are guaranteed. And at the Berks facility, this has never been an issue. They've always had full education available to the children there. And as far as I know, there haven't been any complaints in that regard. I believe they're required to do that. Having been licensed as child welfare and child care facilities, these are things that were already required and have never come up for the Berks facility.
So you're working with a network of people who are all opposed to the Hutto facility. How are you planning to close it down, or what sorts of actions are you taking?
Well, at the moment, we have a 100 events and a 100 days campaign, which, if you'd like to learn more about, you can go to the tdonhutto, tdonhutto.blogspot.com. It's a blog that we have that has a list of our events, and if you're interested in learning more about family detention, we have a short 17-minute documentary and a new hour-long feature-length documentary that was just premiered at the South by Southwest Film Festival a couple of weeks ago that goes really into an amazing degree of depth and has interviews with formerly detained families and how their lives have changed, and that's called The Least of These. Both are available online, and I would be happy to set up a screening with anybody if you would like to learn more about it. So we are setting up screenings and vigils, letter writing campaigns, talks. The two films have brought a lot of new attention to family detention. Particularly The Least of These has been in three international film festivals in the last month. So this has been a boon to our little movement. The 100 Events in 100 Days is meant to mark Obama's first 100 days in office. And part of a move to make a national campaign of ending family detention. To date, has been very much confined to Central Texas and the Austin area, which is great. However, it is a national issue. It's decided by the federal government. It's something that Congress can do something about, and actually something that Obama or anyone in his administration can do something about tomorrow if they decide. It's an ICE policy. It is not written into law. It is something that occurred in a very, that unfolded in a very specific context, and particularly the Hutto facility was opened in the context of the post 9/11 border enforcement and the militarization of the border, of the southern border and the northern border as well, but particularly the southern border. So this is sort of one small thing that, in my honest opinion, that everyone doesn't share this opinion with me, is one little thing that Obama could do to really show that they're moving in a different direction from the Bush administration, that they actually are paying attention to the humanitarian concerns of people who are coming to the United States and understanding the reason why they're coming and under what conditions they're coming, and trying to actually really address the issues there. We are seeing significant interest from the administration. They've hired a special investigator to look at all detention policy, so not just family detention. And as far as I know, everything's sort of under review. So we're hopeful that they will look at the policy, decide that it's a waste of money, and doesn't actually sort of, in the sort of cost-benefit analysis framework of the Obama pragmatism and the efforts to cut the budget, that they will just decide that family detention isn't worth it. And in the meantime, there are a fair number of people who are trying to make it as much trouble as possible to make it worth their while to close both detention centers.
There was the lawsuit from 2 years ago. Is there any sort of legal action that can be taken to shut the facility down?
Well, the lawsuit, they hoped... The attorneys in the lawsuit were very adamant about wanting to close Hutto when they first began the lawsuit. And the stipulations of Flores versus Meese, so they sued the Department of Homeland Security for not meeting the requirements of Flores versus Meese. Flores versus Meese, or Flores versus Reno, depending on which year you look at, requires that children, any child, it was specifically addressing unaccompanied children, but the way the settlement is written, it applies to any child in the custody of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. It requires that they be held in certain conditions, if they are held at all. And privileges release to family members, to the least restrictive environment possible, over any sort of penal or correction-style detention situation. And this was because the Immigration and Naturalization Service, which was the previous incarnation of ICE, was holding children in all kinds of conditions, and there were significant conflicts of interest. For example, the INS officer that was responsible for deciding a child's status would also be the one in charge of their sort of daily needs, and they would play basketball together and then go into an office and this person would decide to deport them. And that creates serious trust issues for children and issues with authority. I mean, if you can just imagine, you know, the parental figure in your life at that particular moment also deciding that they're going to send you back by yourself to another country, can be very damaging. And so this settlement, Flores versus Meese, was intended to fix those problems. The attorneys in the case assumed that Hutto was so awful, and it was when it first opened, that it could never be transitioned to a family-friendly facility. And the judge in the case, pretty early on, said that he was not going to close Hutto. He was not willing to make immigration policy from the bench. This was his position. And so from there, it turned into a conditions of custody case, which is very different, had a very different feel. And so the results of it basically required that Hutto meet existing law, as I said before. If the contracts for the new facilities are awarded, lawsuits can still be brought under Flores versus Meese. However, we have a feeling that they have probably learned their lesson and will actually require that these facilities meet existing law. So there's nothing right now under the law that requires families to be released. What it is an issue of interpretation of the law. And what we've seen with the Bush administration is, in the words of many advocates and activists that I've talked to, the most sinister interpretation of immigration policy than anyone imagined. And these are people who were working with the INS in the 90s, which was a far cry from humane, and have seen the immigration enforcement system just turn into something that no one could imagine. So we're hoping that there's a sea change in the attitude in the agency, because without that, and without some leadership from the Obama administration, without some clear statements about setting new priorities and a new standard of, you know, welcoming people into the United States and attending to humanitarian concerns and international law, for that matter. Without these changes, we're going to continue to see the type of rights infractions at the individual detention center level that we have seen, and it's going to be a case-by-case basis. So it's difficult. It's difficult because immigration law doesn't have a lot of spaces in it, or else we wouldn't have 32,000 people detained on a daily basis. There's some new legislation, actually. Congress is, some of it's in the process of being formulated. Some of it has only recently been proposed, that contains language that would require that families be released. It basically redefines the definitions of custody. The problem right now is that custody equals detention, and in the U.S., detention equals prison. So we don't have to have this chain of equivalence between these terms. We could have custody equal you phone into ICE once a day, once a week, once a month, and you have a community of organizations that you're linked in, that any sort of non-citizen is linked into, who are keeping track. They help them find jobs or services or social workers, whatever they need. This is a completely different paradigm of custody that I would personally like to see. It's lower cost. It's better for people. It's a lot less stressful for everyone involved. But right now, what we have to do, and this is the hard part, is sort of undo that chain of associations between sort of illegal equals, or immigrant equals, or let's back up even more, non-citizen equals immigrant equals illegal equals lawbreaker equals criminal equals in prison, you know, equals detention. There's a whole range of things that could be considered if we rethought that system entirely. But that's a big job, and there's a lot of people, I mean, just to be realistic about how federal bureaucracies work, the Department of Homeland Security, just when it first formed in 2003, had 80,000 people in it, and has more now. Hmm. So if you can imagine trying to do a sort of cultural revolution among not in the Chinese sense, of course, but you know, change a bureaucratic culture of a bureaucracy that large, that has never been particularly friendly to humanitarian concerns, it's an uphill battle. But if anyone can do it, I think, you know, the Obama administration is saying lots of really wonderful, pretty things right now. So
what's happened to all those families that have served time at the Hutto jail? Have they all been deported, or have some of them been able to stay in the United States?
Many have been successful in their asylum claims and have been released. Most, as you might imagine, don't tend to stick around Central Texas, so there's not sort of a community of formerly detained families. Many have been deported, unfortunately. I mean, everyone who's detained there doesn't necessarily have a great chance of winning an asylum claim. And the other thing that's important to realize is that if a family stays in expedited removal and does not claim asylum and does not pursue that track, they will leave Hutto or Berks much faster. So filing an asylum claim, and this is where the detention as deterrence comes into play. Filing an asylum claim dramatically extends your time in detention. And people know this. And there have been families that have had legitimate claims that have chosen not to pursue them because they just wanted to leave. And then there have been families that were eligible for release on bond or parole and chose not to because you don't have a work permit. And if you are moving with your family and you don't already have a strong network, and you don't have people to support you, then what exactly are you going to do? And, you know, everyone has different ideas about living off of charity, and that's not necessarily something that everyone's willing to do. I'm sorry, did that answer your question?
Okay. Yeah, it did. Well, thanks so much for telling us about this, Lauren.
Thank you for having me.
And good luck with your campaign to close the jail.
Thanks.
Lauren Martin is part of the Campaign to End Immigrant Family Detention. You can check out the blog at tdonhutto.blogspot.com.